Are there any questions related to the homework or the challenge that people want to discuss? Ripple of the input current? I think I have a DAB here. So we have the tank inductor current. So the input current IG is, depending on the subinterval, either the tank inductor current, if I have G1 and G4 high, or the negative of it if I have G2 and G3 high, or zero if all these devices are off.
So basically, the output is the IL will be the negative, and the IG will be the negative
of the IL. So if I wanted to plot IG, it would look like negative IL up until the bridge switches. Then it would be IL that same token, if I wanted to plot the output current, same principles apply, but I'm rectifying according to the output bridge instead of the input bridge. That will put me, lost all control. So my output current my output current would then look like this, and there would be a value difference here, so I'll label this N times I out. If I want to reflect that back to the primary so that I can not have to worry about the level difference between the input and output current, just waveform wise, both are just rectified versions of the tank current, but they're rectified according to when their respective bridges switch. Now, these waveforms don't have the dead times in there. During the dead time, all the tank current is circulating between the output capacitors. In that case, everything cancels out, and I don't get any current flowing to the load for that bridge. So we've seen this in our analysis solving the output current, right? During the resonant dead time of the output bridge, there's zero output current, but there is still output current during the dead time of the primary bridge. It would be the opposite for the primary bridge. There would be no input current during its dead time. So from that waveform, you should be able to calculate ripple then. Other questions? Raise your hand if your group is leaning towards a topology other than a buck. So everybody's going to choose a buck?
Let's just say undecided right now. That's the least
possibility.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. We just have to decide.
Three more
days. Yeah. After the game on Monday.
Great. Enjoy the weekend. Okay. So last class, we had moved into the SRC, motivating it from the DAB. saying we have this resonant capacitor, we can begin decreasing the value of it to push us from a DAB type situation where there is a resonance between tank L and tank C if we include this capacitor for DC blocking, but that's just so low frequency, really not seen at all by our switching frequency and harmonics. Moving up closer, moving my resonance up closer to the switching frequency, where now the resonance between L and C will play some significant effect in converter operations. That gives us waveforms that look more like this, where I am now significantly resonant during every period that I've plotted here. And I've again neglected dead times in this. In the DAB, that made every period linear. In the SRC, I'm now analyzing every period as a resonant interval. Okay. And the note is that obviously fundamentally there's no difference, right? So back here, I could use state plane analysis on every one of these intervals. They're all resonant intervals between the same two elements. The problem is just going to be that I'm huge circles because my normalization is going to cause me to be very large valued in my normalized scheme, and I'm going to get just some tiny 1 degree of a resonance. So I approximate it as linear. But in some sense, we can say that the DAB is really just a degenerate case of the SRC solution. If I let C go to infinity on the SRC, I get back exactly this. Okay. So we went through, sketched the state plane. We had two sub-intervals for half period and symmetric half periods. We really just analyzed intervals 1 and 2. We wrote the equations for these. We found that M1 and M2 were the same, J1 and J2 were the same. That left us with a simplified set of equations. And we went through and did our output current averaging and complete period equation and ended here. Because we only have these two sub-intervals and they're both resonant, we can do a little bit more manipulation with the series resonant converter than I've typically asked. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this equation and I'm going to plug in my results from the previous slide to derive a kind of a complete equation for this, where I'm going to eliminate M1, solve for the output current in terms of my control variable, which would be that beta, the phase shift time. Okay. So in order to do that, let me assemble my equations here. I've got J is equal to 2F over pi times M1. I've got pi over F is alpha plus theta. And then my equation for R1 and R2, those are what I plugged together to get these results. So I'm going to just take those and I'm going to plug them in for alpha and beta and simplify a little bit and write my equations for alpha and beta on the next slide. So alpha pi minus these two arctans, J2 is equal to J1, M1 is equal to M2. What I'm going to end up with is alpha is equal to pi minus 2 arctan of J1 over M1. And then for beta, same thing. J1 is J2, M1 is M2. These two arctans are the same thing. Sum of 2 arctan of J1 over 2 plus M1. So I've got a system of 4 equations. I'm going to use that to eliminate M1, J1, and alpha. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to solve for J1 from the, you know, I can do really either the alpha or beta equation. I'll go ahead and solve from the beta equation. So taking this, I can say the tangent of beta over 2 is equal to J1 over 2 plus M1. If I multiply this 2 plus M1 over here, that's J1. I'm going to take that result for J1 and plug it back into my alpha equation. I'm going to push the pi and the 2 arctangent over to the left so that I get alpha minus pi over 2. Push that negative sign over, that'll give me negative alpha, positive pi, and I'll take the tangent of that. That's equal to J1 over M1, and if I plug in from my previous line, it's equal to 2 plus M1 over M1 times tangent of beta over 2. Now taking these two parts of that double equality, I'm going to rearrange and solve for M1. It's going to give me what? So I'll multiply M1 over, it'll give me the tangent of alpha plus pi over 2. And then I'm going to have to subtract this tangent beta over 2 over. I'll have M1 is equal to, I'll divide that back through. Let's see. We do this in a couple steps here. I'll have M1 times tangent of pi minus alpha over 2 is equal to 2 tangent beta over 2 plus M1 tangent beta over 2. And if I pull everything over, M1 is equal to 2 tangent beta over 2 over tangent of pi minus alpha over 2 minus tangent beta over 2. Mistake so far? So now I can take this solution, plug it back into my equation for J. J is equal to 2F over pi times M1, where M1 is this expression. In the process, I'm going to replace alpha according to my pi over f is equal to alpha plus beta. So I'm going to have pi over 2 minus alpha is pi over f plus beta. Pi over 2f minus beta over 2 minus tangent of beta over 2. Now I have my normalized output current as a function of only my normalized phase shift and normalized switching frequency. I can take this then and plot it for a few various values. This is F going from 1.05 to, forget where I ended, 1.5 maybe, this being the smallest F. And down here being the largest. Beta I took from 0 to pi. Beta is normalized by the resonant frequency of my tank. So if I make beta equal to pi, I'm allowing it to resonate for an entire half period in my beta subinterval. You see that going above about pi over 2, I, much like the DAB, have this decrease in output current. If I want to give an output current, I can pick two different phase shifts to achieve it. One on this side will have lower RMS. This side we don't want to use. This is, we'll achieve the same output power, but we'll do so with significant additional resonant currents, higher peak, higher RMS currents. So our control range, really, if we want to minimize conduction loss, is limited to this half. These trajectories, we can think about them. They begin to imply some of the different possibilities for a converter like this. So to achieve some sort of regulation, if I want to be able to regulate the output voltage by changing the current to keep it at a fixed value, I can do so over potentially a limited range by changing beta. I could keep beta the same and change F, my normalized switching frequency. Now, F is FS over F naught. I don't have much hope of changing F naught dynamically during operation, but FS, I could change as I please. Right? So I could stick on one of these trajectories, move like this to do my output current regulation within the achievable range, or I could look at hopping between different trajectories by changing the switching frequency. So this would be phase shift modulation. This would be frequency modulation. Now, there are advantages and disadvantages to both. In the early days of resonant converters, a lot of them were operating with diode output bridges where we didn't have the same capability to do phase shift modulation. The secondary bridge is passive, no control of the phase shift. In that case, we were dominantly frequency modulation as far as control of resonant converters. Part of that is why they didn't take off as quickly as people might have thought, despite their advantageous characteristics, and just that frequency modulation requires more complex controls and analysis and complicates a little bit your converter design, because now my transformer, I can't design it for max power at a given frequency. I have to look at how it's going to operate as I change switching frequency around. Still can find a worst case and still can design for that worst case. So thing I want to mention, did I lose it? Okay, well, let's hop into simulations here. So just to look at the operation of this series resonant converter, I put together an LP spice simulation. I have included dead time and have more or less ideal devices, but I put some parallel switch node caps to emulate the output capacitance of the devices. And then I'm driving this with phase shift modulation. And I'm going to vary some of the parameters in it. So here I'm looking at time domain waveforms. The state plane that we analyze and solve, the MR versus JL state plane. And then up here, I'm looking at the JLMP state plane, if I call this ZP. This is the one that's going to indicate whether or not we achieve soft switching. We neglected this in the analysis up to this point. You see the waveforms look like we predicted, ones that I showed in order to motivate this mode of operation. State plane looks pretty similar. J1 and J2 aren't quite equal. Part of that is my numbers weren't exactly perfect. Part of that is current dropping a little bit due to the resonant transitions, which we neglected. So those are pulling energy out of the inductor during the dead time, which we neglected for this analysis, but we're still pretty close. And M1 and M2, these two vertical values, definitely very close. This is operation. May not have it. I believe F is equal to 1.05. And I'm 100 volts to 100 volts with a turns ratio of 1. Looking at some different cases with these same plots, if I go to very heavy load, I needed to increase my phase shift interval in order to get higher output current with the same conditions. See, my ZVS of the primary side happens very quickly now because I'm at much higher current. It's almost just an instant jump over to achieve ZVS. But my state plane of the main resonant take element still stays very resonant. If I look down at light load, going to very low output power, I drop my phase shift down to get there. My main tank waveforms still look like the same state plane, still follow my analysis. My primary side voltage, though, I've dropped down to low enough power that I've lost ZVS. And intuitively drawing similarities between the waveforms of the SRC and the DAB, we could say this is going to have the same issue that the DAB had. If there's going to be some minimum power at which I can obtain ZVS, if I go below that, I'm going to lose it. So this primary side waveform is showing my resonance here drops. I hit zero current left in the inductor and end up having to hard switch this much voltage. Okay. Here I pushed my switching frequency much closer to my resonant frequency. That's approximately F0. I still need FS to be very slightly greater than F0. And motivate that a little bit more in the future. But so this is operating with the two very close to one another. What you see is that my tank waveforms now look very dominantly sinusoidal. And on my state plane, I'm almost just a pure resonant. I've got a very short beta interval, and I'm in alpha for almost the full pi over 2. And this is moving more towards the true resonant converter, the behavior is there. The idea of this, which we'll go over briefly in future lectures, hopping back to the idea that we started with here. So if I design my tank so that the impedance resonates right at the switching frequency, what I'm going to see is I've got the spectrum in green for the voltage applied by the two bridges, and I have this very low impedance right at the switching frequency, which is going to cause me to have a large gain at this harmonic, but all the others are going to see a high impedance and be attenuated. I've essentially created as a resonant filter for just that fundamental component So even though I'm putting a square wave in, my tank response is going to be almost purely sinusoidal. And that leads to an analysis technique where we really only examine that fundamental component. We'll go over that briefly in a future class. But here, just showing the operation, I'm getting ZVS, I'm getting nearly sinusoidal waveforms. There are good things and bad things about that. So in the good category, I've got a lot of energy available for ZVS. My currents have lost almost all of their high frequency component. So for example, the current that's going into the transformer is almost purely sinusoidal. So any AC effects due to higher frequencies, skin effect, proximity effect should be mitigated. I'm really only gonna have to examine my main switching frequency. All those higher harmonics are gone. On the bad category, now because of these sinusoidal waveforms, I'm going to have very high peak currents relative to my average if I compare it to the DAB. The DAB, I could get the same kind of output power with the current that looks like maybe this. Okay. Alignment is a little bad, but I could have a much lower peak to get the same average output here because it's purely sinusoidal. To get that average, I need to go up to a higher value. As I shift the output so that Z is not equal to NVG, what I see as in the DAB is kind of a skewing of my waveforms. Yeah.
For the peak currents you're just talking about, mm-hmm. I'm wondering practically, how does it help having less peak current? I know RMS current or average current, but RMS current has to do with losses, and peak voltages has to do with actual ability to block voltage, but how does that work with current?
Really, it's mainly the RMS that I talk about. So if I want to get the same average and I have a higher peak, I know my RMS is going to be higher for a comparable wave shape.
So it's the same thing as the RMS idea.
Yeah. You know, there is, in the same way, so you mentioned you peak voltage has to do with voltage rating. The current can have to do with current rating, but this current rating of devices is somewhat of a nebulous parameter, whether it's rated on saturation current or thermal limitations. Generally with current, you're rating more on how much loss can I handle. Voltage shunt resistance is a relatively small loss mechanism, so you rate on breakdown. Okay. So here I drop the output voltage, but it's smaller than n times the input voltage. What I get is my waveforms are now kind of skewed. Everything that happens during this positive interval is rotated counterclockwise. Everything during the negative interval is kind of rotated clockwise. This has the same issues that I was just mentioning on the previous slide now. So relative to a matched output voltage for the same power, same output current, I'm going to have very high peaks because everything is looking more triangular than something closer to a square wave or trapezoid. And to analyze this case, we could go back through and do the exact same analysis we did before, just allowing for some additional parameter that B out over NVG is not equal to 1, it's equal to some value, N sub B, okay? And carry through the same steps. We'd get a slightly more complex set of equations. We wouldn't have this nice cancellation that M1 is equal to M2, but the general process is the same, okay? However, we can make a very quick argument for why the waveforms look like this. I think I have that after a couple more slides. Here, just to motivate what I've been saying earlier, if I make F much greater than 1, means FS much greater than F naught. Means my resonant frequency is very low frequency. One way I can obtain that is by making my capacitance very large. And what I get back is really things that look more like the DAB converter. So this is my capacitor voltage. Because it's very large, it's now some hundreds of millivolts for my 100 volt bridge. So it really doesn't affect the converter operation hardly at all. My currents go back to this trapezoidal wave shape. My resonance of the tank inductor and tank capacitor really is quite uninteresting because my voltage doesn't change at all. But my resonance of the primary side looks back like what we analyzed with the DAB converter. So the next two slides have a ton of information. This is just kind of a high level view. There's a reference here that looked at comparing the behaviors of the dual active bridge and the series resonant converter over a variety of operating conditions, looking at some of the different metrics. So what this is showing is waveforms for the DAB up top and the SRC down below for different phase shifts in the three columns, corresponding inductances that he solves in each case, and then each of the three curves is a different input to output voltage ratio. So the solid red curve is matched, V is equal to NVG. The dashed and small dashed are different ratios with output voltage increasing. So example in the DAB with V is equal to NVG, we get waveforms very similar to what we've seen before. And as I go up in phase shift, my phase shift interval increases and I become less square wave and more trapezoidal. But as I go through these curves and increase the output voltage, I again get this skewing effect. Really, same thing down here in the SRC, designed close to resonance. One thing is this FR over FS, that's the inverse of our capital F. Okay? He defines it as resonant frequency over switching frequency. We've been defining it as switching frequency over resonant frequency. So this is still resonant frequency, slightly below switching frequency. And then going through down here, see there's a big effect with changing voltage, much like the DAB. Really, the waveforms kind of track each other for these designs. Just these ones are more sinusoidal. Okay. And then doing some analysis and comparison, looking at for these same cases, comparing the DAB to a moderately resonant SRC and a very resonant SRC, just by how close that resonant frequency is to the switching frequency. In terms of things like, this is transformer VA rating, transformer voltage, stress, inductor current, and then THD of the inductor current. To draw out a few benefits, the inductor current THD, like we were just saying a moment ago, the trapezoidal waveforms of the DAB have still some significant high frequency content due to these corners and linear segments. It means that they're going to have high frequency elements going through the tank inductor, going through the transformer. Those are going to result in larger skin effect, proximity effect. All these high frequency effects on the magnetics will generate larger loss. If you go over to the series resonant converter, when you're somewhat further away from resonance, you get reduced high frequency content. When you're very close to resonance, you're almost purely sinusoidal. If you're very low THD, you can expect lower AC winding losses. Transformer voltage stresses and requirements on the ratings. Everything being normalized, EAV, transformer voltage stresses stay constant. I'm always applying just the primary bridge voltage onto the tank, secondary bridge voltage onto the tank. The SRC, because of that capacitor, I now have a significant series voltage between my primary and my transformer. And that results in actually a variable change in voltage stresses. Generally, it makes them higher, but there are some cases where I can actually end up with lower voltage stresses on my transformer. And then transformer ratings, what kind of peak voltage times peak current I need on it. The lowest in the DAB here down around 2, significantly higher for the fully series resonant curve because of the higher magnitude of those waveforms going in due to this large resonance. A lot of information I know. General conclusions on the comparison of the two. The DAB has advantages in a smaller physically resonant tank, smaller RMS currents, and wider soft switching range when you have a comparable design for both for the same ratings. SRC, the capacitor kind of compensates the inductance. And if I'm in a situation where my transformer has much more leakage inductance than I want for the DAB, it can compensate some of that out and allow me to have a good converter design even with the larger inductance. Lower winding losses due to this reduction in THD that we mentioned, and potentially reduced device turnoff losses due to lower current stresses at the turnoff time. So, best I could do to summarize this up, in reality, as with any topology selection process, it's somewhat of what are your exact specs, what devices are available, how can you design your transformer, do a paper design of both, see which one is better. Thought I had, I'm sorry, I'm missing a slide. Let me go back to any of these, except this one. So here we were talking about the zero voltage switching conditions of this series resonant converter. If we go to light load, it'll lose EVF. We did not analyze the resonant behavior of that transition. So I want to look at it briefly here just to make some arguments about what's going to happen when we do. So when I look at the example primary side dead time, I want to know whether or not I'm going to achieve EVF. My equivalent circuit for the series resonant converter looks like when my primary side turns off, I'll have a capacitance CP. That's going to be in series with my tank, CR and L, my transformer, through to my output voltage. And so as I analyze this, I can't put this down here on the state plane that I've been using to analyze the tank, right? Because that was normalized according to CR and L. As I include CP, I am shifting my equivalent capacitance. If I don't make any approximation, my new capacitance is CR in series with CP. It's going to reduce significantly, and my normalization will no longer be valid. It will no longer give me circles. Okay, so that's why I have to look at a different state plane. And if I do what I just mentioned, if I take an equivalent capacitor that is these two in series, this analysis is going to be not so easy because then the equivalent voltage on that capacitor is the equivalent bridge voltage plus the capacitor voltage. And I have to figure out when that's going to hit CVS, which is going to be at some fractional component of the voltage. Fortunately, I can make an argument here about these two capacitors. So even if I'm in the fully resonant case, CR resonates with LL, at a frequency close to the switching frequency. I want to get a period of this resonance in the switching period. Okay. This resonance with CP, I need that to be much faster, right? I want my dead time to be a relatively small portion of the switching period. So I want my resonance with CP included to occur much more quickly than my resonance in the tank. And because L is the same in both cases and the current in L is the same, the only way for me to achieve that is to have CP be much less than CR. And in general, in the design of this, CP much less than CR should always be achieved. Otherwise, your dead time is going to be a significantly high portion of your switching period. And during that dead time, you're not bringing in power. Right? You're just cycling power to achieve ZVS. So if I do that, if I design in this way, and if I analyze accordingly, then CP is much smaller. CP in series with CR looks just like CP. So I can say during this dead time, I can approximate the behavior just as this primary side capacitance. And then analyze this on a M sub P, J sub L state plane. I'll normalize with V base is equal to VG, R naught prime, because this is a different normalization from previously, is L over CP. And I base prime is V base over R naught prime. On my axes, what I'm going to end up with is in my transition from plus VG to minus VG on the primary side, I'm going to start at some current. This is going to be from our previous analysis what we called J1. But now I'm going to have to normalize it differently. So this will be J1 prime. And the center of this resonance is my output voltage reflected. If I keep my V out as equal to NVG approximation, that center will be right here, radius. And I'm going to move like this to achieve ZVS. This state plane looks familiar. This is exactly the DAV state plane now. So if I want to include the effect of these ZVS transitions, if I think they're significant in my converter operation, I can analyze them really the same way as the DAB, then I'd have to couple the equations I get out of this back into the equations for my main resonant tank. So this is going to look like between what we call subinterval 1 and 2, there's going to be some drop in current from J1 prime to whatever I want to call this, JX prime. The result of doing that, if my operation looks like I've shown here, this could have very significant effect on my converter operation because I'm getting a big drop in current. If I don't analyze this, I'd assume that my second subinterval starts here at J1 prime, but it's actually starting at 20% of that. Okay. This might be some intermediate load. If I drop to smaller current, I'd have something like is shown up here where I'm hard switching. If I go to much higher current, I'd have something way up here. In this case, at heavy load, my ZVS transition likely has very little effect on my converter operation. There's almost no change at all in my current. It's a relatively short time. I could probably get away without analyzing the ZVS transition in that state plane. Okay. That all make sense? Okay. One more quick thing. I was talking about the behavior of what happens when the output voltage is not equal to NVG. We could go analyze that on the state plane. Can also just make a really quick and easy argument using linear analysis and superposition. I'm back to my DAB. I've got my linear waveforms for the DAB here. Okay. And my equivalent model of the DAB, I could, if I'm neglecting the ZVS transitions, draw it like this, where at one side I just have this square wave generated by the primary bridge. On the other side, I have the reflected square wave generated by the secondary bridge. And then at my output, I have this link, okay, that we were talking about before. It's my tank current rectified according to which state the output bridge is in. And I can write it like that. I out is IL reflected, IL over N, times whatever the sign is of this voltage source. So if this voltage source is positive, it means my bridge is connected positive. I out is IL. This voltage source is negative, I am flipped and I'm rectifying that current. Okay. This, my average output current, is just now taking the integral of really this block and dividing by TS, because under this approximation, this area and this area must be equal. This has zero charge. If I integrate just this segment, that tells me my total output charge, divide by TS to get my average output current. Okay. So looking at this same circuit, I could apply superposition to my VP source and my N times V out source, right? And then look at the output current that's generated from those two sources individually. Okay. So if I look at just the output source, I'm going to generate an inductor current that is a triangle wave. If I look at just the input current, I'm going to generate an inductor current that is just a triangle wave. The two are going to be phase shifted. They're both just pure triangle waves. The difference is in how I rectify to the output. So for the secondary source, the current is rectified according to that source. So what I get is this sawtooth wave. I put in a negative sign whenever that source switches polarity here and here. So I get this sawtooth, and the average value of that sawtooth is zero because my tank waveforms are purely AC. Okay. For the primary side, my sawtooth is rectified according to the output bridge, not according to itself. So my sawtooth my triangle wave is rectified at these different points, giving me some average value. Okay. And if I add the two together, what I get is this. If I add the full waveforms together, I get my tank current. Add the output currents together, I get in black my output current. Superposition applies for these linear sources. So the big thing is this waveform changes my wave shape, changes my peak current, changes my dynamics, but it contributes no average output current, right? So if I change the magnitude of that source, so I've increased the output, my sawtooth gets a little taller, my primary side superposition component stays the same. When I add them together, I get a larger sawtooth component, but my average stays the same. So changing the output voltage doesn't change the current average. Changes peaks, changes RMSs, changes soft switching conditions, but my average output current stays the same. Now, this neglected dead times. If I start including the effects of those dead times, well, if I start hard switching, if I have to have a longer dead time, that's going to have a kind of a second order effect on my output current, and it will change some. But at least to a first order linear approximation, this DAB behaves like a current source at the output. Same is going to be true of the SRC. I can do this whole same thing again with sinusoids. If I change the magnitude of the output, sinusoid's going to distort. I'm going to have more of the reactive one and less of the power delivered. but I'm going to have the same average at the output. Okay. Make sense? All right. Design a very tiny box. Look forward to seeing them on Monday. Thank you.